I kept imagining lots of things. Like Miri staring at me in June. Like the pizza cook staring at me in June. Like Ethan thinking mean things about me in June. June had been right. Being out together was scary. It shouldn't have been, though. It should have been normal. We aren't monsters. Or aliens. We aren't even sinners. We're two girls who like each other. It's not the worst thing in the world. And if Katie and Maggie accepted us right away, maybe the rest of the kids in school would, too. Maybe I could do something brave again, this time in public. So I started to inch my hand closer to June's. Every nerve ending on my skin felt like it was on fire. My hand moved closer and closer. My heart beat faster and faster. Then I saw something out of the corner of my eye. At first I thought I was still imagining things. Then I felt like I'd been electrified. Mom and Dad had just walked into Tony's Pizza. They were staring up at the board, like they don't order the same cheese pizza all the time, and hadn't seen me yet. I yanked my hand away and dove under the table. Now Henry was looking at me like I was a freak. June looked like I'd stabbed her in the heart. Okay, maybe not that bad, but she did look hurt. I felt like I'd stabbed myself in the heart. I don't want to have to hide from Mom and Dad for the rest of my life. I don't even want to hide from them for the rest of middle school. I don't want to live my life wondering when they're going to shame me away. I don't want to be ashamed. So I've decided that we'll skip step three of the plan. We really should have come up with a fancier name. Entirely. I might not have found Anna yet, but I need to see you now. Right away. We're even skipping the movie so I can get to St. Augustine sooner. Maybe together we can convince Mom and Dad to accept the Morgan girls the way we are. Love, Evie. P.S. I'll see you soon. P.P.S. In case you were wondering, Mom and Dad didn't see me. I think. Saturday, June 1st. Really early. Dear Scylla, I'm writing this from the car. It's dark, and we're on a back road now, with no streetlights at all. But I borrowed Katie's phone so I can see. I know you're not going to get this letter in the mail, but I have to write down what happened. I guess writing is how I make sense of things now, and I really need to make sense of what I saw. After I finished my last letter, I went home. I had to pack, and I had to make some excuse about why I'd be away all night. Mom and Dad weren't back yet, though. There was a note on the fridge saying they'd gone to a 7 o'clock movie. I left my own note that I'd be sleeping over at Maggie's. I hope they don't call or check up on me. But even if they do, we'll hopefully be long gone by then. Depending on how fast Maggie's sister drives, which judging by how fast she's going now, is very, very fast. We should be there by morning. I packed my stuff quickly. All I needed was a change of clothes and a pillow for the car. My toothbrush, too. I don't want my breath to smell like pepperoni and onion rings when I see you again for the first time in almost a year. I still had an hour before Hannah said she'd be ready to drive us all, so I decided I had time for a little more investigating. The filing cabinet in Dad's office was locked, but I found the key right away, in the middle drawer of his desk. You used to keep the key to your diary in the middle drawer, too. Fine, I'll apologize again for reading it. Dad's filing cabinet was boring, though. Bills, instruction manuals for the fridge and the smoke alarm, stuff like that. Until I got to the bottom drawer. That's where I found it, wedged in the very back of the very last folder. It was wrinkle soft and torn on the bottom right edge, but it was still intact. A picture of a newborn baby. She had wispy brown hair and green eyes, just like you. She was beautiful, even though she kind of looked like an alien with a big bald spot, just like an old man. There was a name written on the back of the picture, in Mom's loopy handwriting. Amelie Evelyn. I remember how much you love the movie, Amelie. I've watched it with you probably 2 dozen times. You have a poster of the garden gnome from that movie over your bed. Your bed here, I mean. You named your baby after Amelie. And after me. Mom and Dad have had this picture the entire time. Even after I asked them about the baby, they still lied to me. They told me they didn't know where she was or what she looked like. They told me they didn't want to stir up trouble. They told me to leave things alone. Mom and Dad are liars. Bible-ignoring, commandment-disobeying liars. Okay, maybe, thou shalt not bear false witness against your neighbor, is only the 8th commandment, but it's still pretty darn important, especially when I'm not their neighbor. I'm their daughter. And the secret has to do with my niece, my flesh and blood. What if you haven't seen this picture? What if they know more? They're hypocrites. And I shouldn't care what hypocrites think about who I might or might not like. Okay, we're stopping for food now. Katie wants some pretzels. June and Maggie want 2 of those convenience store cinnamon buns. We're going to get an energy drink for Hannah, too. She looks like she's about to pass out. I don't think I'll be able to eat, though. I'm too angry. Love, Evie. P.S. Maggie told Hannah that we'd mow the lawn for her all summer if she drove us to St. Augustine's. I hate mowing the lawn, but it'll be worth it when I see you. Monday, June 3rd. Dear Scylla, you're not going to write back. You're never going to write back. Wednesday, June 5th. Dear Scylla, you can't write back. You can't hold a pen or a pencil or type on a computer. You can't seal up your words in an envelope and press a kiss on the outside. You can't sit in a desk chair and tap your pen against the table in that tap, tap, tappity tap rhythm you used to do that I hated. You can't give me advice. You can't come home. You can't do anything. Because you're gone. Gone. It hurts to write these words. Last year, when Katie's grandpa died and I went to the funeral, her grandma kept saying that her heart hurt. Back then, I thought she meant she was having a heart attack, that she was feeling all the symptoms we learned about in health class. A tight chest, pain in your arm or jaw, indigestion. Now I know that having your heart hurt isn't just a feeling you have in your body. Because yeah, my body does hurt. Ever since that morning at your school, I felt like I've been punched in the stomach and run over by a truck. At the same time. It feels like there's a fist inside of my chest, squeezing my heart so hard that it shriveled to the size of a raisin. But even though it's raisin-sized, the pain is the size of Mount Everest. My body does hurt, but that's not the worst part. There's something else that hurts too, something I can't even describe. It's not something that's in me, it's something that's gone. I feel hollow inside. You know how some amputees can feel phantom pain in the limb they've lost? I read an article once about a soldier who lost his leg in Iraq. Every time it rained, for the rest of his life, his knee hurt. He didn't even have a knee anymore, and it still hurt. That's what I feel like now. Like there's this huge hole that someone carved out in my stomach, and even though it's empty, everything inside of it aches. Maybe that's where my soul was. Now that you're gone, it doesn't want to stay around anymore, and is reaching up toward heaven to be with you. That sounds ridiculous. Me writing this at all is ridiculous. Love, Evie. P.S. I miss you so much. Friday, June 7th. Dear Scylla, this is ridiculous, but I had to write again. Writing is what I do now. It's the only thing I can do now. I can't talk to anyone, not Katie or Maggie, not even June, definitely not Mom and Dad. No one else knows what it's like to have their sister die. No one else has had a sister die in childbirth and then been lied to about it for almost 9 whole months. 9 months. So I'm writing to you, because you're the only thing that makes sense to me right now. I'm not writing on stationery anymore, though, even though I do have one sheet of paper left. One single piece, mocking me with its bright colors and happy roses. I won't use it, though. I'm using this notebook instead. My old, ripped notebook from last year with the torn black cover and half the pages ripped out. It's not pretty, but it matches how I feel inside. Dark. Gloomy. Sad. Angry. I don't know whether I'm more sad or angry. It switches all the time. Right now I'm angry. I'm furious. Not at you, though. I'm not mad at you anymore. I was once, but that was before I found out the truth. The truth that Mom and Dad aren't just hypocrites. They aren't just bad parents who are ashamed of their daughter for a teeny tiny sin. They're evil. They're liars. They're sinners. I thought them keeping Amelie's picture from me was awful, but this is a million times worse. It's like when places have those guess how many jelly beans are in the jar games, and I guess something like 50, but it's really 4,050. This is jelly bean jar worthy. I will never talk to them again for the rest of my life. Love, Evie. P.S. Why did you have to die? Tuesday, June 11th. Dear Scylla, I need to tell you what happened. I need to tell me what happened. Maybe then it won't feel so much like a dream. Or a nightmare. We got to St. Augustine School for Girls as the sun was rising. No one was around, so we had time to figure out where to park and what exactly to do. Because besides getting there and finding you, we didn't have much of a plan. There was a half-eaten cinnamon bun and a bottle of water left from our pit stop in the middle of the trip. So even though I still felt sick, I ate the food. I drank the water. I needed something to do until people started to come out of their dorm rooms. We figured that the dining hall was the safest bet. Everyone eats in the morning, right? And you never skipped breakfast. Well, except for the beginning of your pregnancy, when you were barfing all the time. You never skipped breakfast. Not never skip breakfast. Skipped. Past tense. You're in the past tense now. I hate the past tense. But when girls started filing out of the dorm rooms, all in matching blue and gold plaid skirts and crisp white button-down shirts, you weren't there. I looked really closely, too. I looked at everyone. There were tall girls and short girls, girls with short hair and long hair, blonde, brown, black, and red hair. I didn't see your long brown curls, though. Hannah was asleep in the front seat of the car, but Katie, Maggie, and June were as awake as I was. I think they'd had energy drinks, too. Maggie suggested trying the arts building, since you loved theater so much. Katie shot that down, and I agreed. No one would be rehearsing at 8 in the morning. Then June suggested the registrar's office, which made total sense. You were a registered student. They'd have to tell me where your room was. I am your sister, after all. The registrar's building was the one on the front of the brochure, the one that looks like Hogwarts, with the gray stone walls and tall turrets. I felt about 2 inches tall walking through the doorway, but I made sure to straighten my spine and hold my head up high, all that posture stuff Mom used to nag us about. The stuff she'll never nag you about again. I was afraid the office would be closed on the weekend, but there was a lady behind the desk. A nun, actually. She was as old as Grandma, and smelled like oranges and mint. She wore jeans and a regular collared shirt, but she still had on her black veil. Huge green eyes glared at me behind a pair of cat's eye glasses. She was nice, though. She listened to me tell her about how I really needed to see you. She patted me on the hand when she said there was no student by your name registered there. I described you, like maybe she was confused, or you were using some alias so you could really escape Mom and Dad's influence. Nope. Nothing. Nada. She had no clue who you were. I was about to set up camp on the floor. If I'd brought a sleeping bag, I would have unrolled it right then, when Katie yanked me on my arm and pulled me out the door. June dragged me down the hall and Maggie pushed me out the front door. At first I protested, but then Katie said that the secretary was super old and probably senile, that she didn't know what she was talking about, and we should explore the campus more. I think I knew deep down that Katie didn't know what she was talking about, but I still followed them, down the tulip-lined path through the quad, around two girls playing catch, around the corner of a fancy brick building with ivy growing up the walls, by the parking lot next to the girls' dormitories, straight into Mom and Dad. We turned a corner and there they were, getting out of our old silver minivan with the Choose Life bumper sticker on the back. Mom looked like she'd just woken up. She probably had, since she always falls asleep during car rides longer than an hour. It looked like they'd driven all night, just like we had. I'd been holding hands with June, and I dropped hers right away. I felt guilty, but by then, it'd be even more awkward to grab it again, because Dad was hugging me so tightly I couldn't breathe. And Mom was hovering like a mosquito, buzzing around and around. I wanted to swat her away, but I wanted to know what was going on even more. I had no idea how they'd found me, but however they had, all that hugging and crying were not normal. They should be yelling at me for running away and lying, or for holding June's hand. But no, they were crying. Crying so much that when Mom joined the boa constrictor strength hug, my shoulder got soaked and snotty. That's when they told me the truth. Well, after a lot of confusion and ing and telling my friends to go wait on a bench across the quad. So now I know the truth. The secretary wasn't senile. You didn't go to St. Augustine's. You didn't even enroll. You were all still deciding what to do when you went into labor. Labor that started out fine, but that ended up not so fine. Labor where the baby was in distress. Labor where your heartbeat dropped and the baby's heartbeat dropped. Labor where you lost a lot of blood. When Mom said the word blood, I flashed to this mental image of you in a hospital gown stained red. Red like blood. Red like cherries, your favorite fruit. Red like your favorite t-shirt. The one you wore practically every week last year. The doctors tried to save you, but they could only save Amelie. Mom held my hand while she told me this, squeezed it so tightly I had to pull away. I reached out again a second later, though. I needed something to hold on to that was a part of you, because with every word Mom said, you slipped further away. I keep thinking of the time you fell off your bike in middle school. You were trying to do a wheelie and flew right over the handlebars. You scraped your nose and your right shoulder and both of your knees. Blood was everywhere, but Mom wiped you off and put band-aids all over you. You were fine then. Your cuts healed. The only evidence left was that scar on your knee I always said looked like a shamrock. There's no band-aid big enough for this. Love, Evie. P.S. I miss you so much it hurts. Wednesday, June 12th. Dear Scylla, Mom and Dad told me more on the car ride home. They tried to. After a while, I stuck my earbuds in and turned the music up really loud. I found the angriest songs on my playlist, the ones with loud guitars and booming bass, the ones that pounded their way into my head. That's what I wanted, something else to fill up my head, something to turn off my brain and block my ears. It didn't work, though, because even though my ears were filled with the screech of electric guitars and the banging of drums, I'd still heard what Mom and Dad had said when we got in the car, when I asked them how you could have died in childbirth. I mean, we don't live in the pioneer days. Don't people know how to deliver babies by now?
She got an infection, Mom said. She sounded like she had something caught in her throat. And the hospital near Aunt Maureen isn't the best.
Whatever was in her throat got bigger, like one of those foam bath pellets that inflate some water. Except this was inflating from her tears. They dripped down her face, some traveling a zigzag path and others going straight. Like even her tears didn't know what to do in a situation like this.
What do you mean? Isn't the best?
I didn't realize I was screaming until I heard my voice fill the car.
It's a hospital. It has doctors and nurses. They went to school to learn how to do that. Why didn't their teachers fail them if they're so bad at their jobs? And why did you send her to that hospital anyway? You know Aunt Maureen lives in the middle of nowhere.
Things happen, Dad said. God had a plan.
But for once, he didn't sound like he believed what he was saying. He sounded like he'd just dropped his cell phone in a puddle.
We didn't realize the hospital was so bad. We didn't think about complications.
Dad made a choking noise. Now the thing was in his throat.
Scylla got an infection and started bleeding. Before they knew it, things got bad. Really bad. Fast.
That's why you rushed out of the house. The past 9 months flashed before my eyes, Mom and Dad racing to pack their suitcases, Aunt Megan not answering any of my questions, Mom's tears, Dad's silence, Mom's obsessive cooking, Dad's transformation into a workaholic hermit.
You lied! You've been lying this whole time! Did Aunt Megan know about this, too? And Aunt Maureen?
They didn't say anything, which totally meant yes.
Was Scylla in pain? I asked. What did she look like?
I squeezed my eyes closed to stop myself from imagining it, but my brain was blank. Even my head was rejecting what had happened. All I saw was black emptiness. I wonder if that's all you see now, too. I wonder if you're in heaven. I wonder if there is a heaven. If there is, I hope you're there. Mom started to answer, and that's when I shoved my earbuds into my ears so hard they hurt. I heard the music and the beats, the chords and the melody. I didn't hear the lyrics, though.
All I heard were the words still floating around the car. Infection. Bleeding. Really fast. I can still hear them. Love, Evie. Friday, June 14th. Dear Scylla, here's what else I heard. Here's what they told me when we got home, when Dad took my earbuds away from me and they forced me to sit in the living room. Jesus looked down at us from over the fireplace, as bloody and as broken as usual. Like you were. Like I felt. Do you know how Mom and Dad knew where to find me? It was because they knew I'd been writing to you at St. Augustine's. Because the school had been mailing back everything I'd sent to you. Everything. Every question I had about God, every feeling I'd had about June, everything I'd done with June. They knew everything. They'd read everything. That's how they knew where I was, because I wasn't careful. I messed up. I left one of my letters on Dad's desk, the one where I wrote all about my date and Tony's pizza and how I was going to St. Augustine's. They know everything. I wasn't embarrassed, though. I was angry. Because if you're dead, that means it was them writing to me. Mom and Dad were pretending to be you. Which means those three letters weren't from you after all. You never wrote back to me. There was a reason your letters were typed, and it wasn't just because you felt like using the computer. It was because Mom and Dad couldn't forge more than your signature. And looking back at the letters, they didn't even do that good of a job on that. I wanted it to be true so badly that I probably would have overlooked anything. Dad said they did it to spare me the pain of you dying. Mom said they did it because they were in denial. That they still felt so guilty about sending you away they needed to ignore what happened to you. I say that's a bunch of bull. At least they didn't confront me about June. Small blessings. Love, Evie. Saturday, June 15th. Dear Scylla, June's called every day for the past 2 weeks. She emailed me that she'd use a secret code so I'd know it was her. Two rings, then a hang-up, then two rings again. I didn't answer the phone calls. I didn't answer the email. I wonder if she thinks I'm breaking up with her. I wonder if I should care. Love, Evie. Monday, June 17th. Dear Scylla, Mom told me this morning that they'd never read my letters from when you were staying at Aunt Maureen's. Like that newsflash was supposed to make what they'd done better. Like they were all saintly now or something. Their big revelation doesn't make things better, though. It actually makes them worse. Because after you died, it's not like you were choosing to ignore my letters. Before you died, you were. Love, Evie. P.S. Didn't you know that I was the one person who wouldn't judge you? You didn't have to hide from me, too. P.P.S. I feel awful being mad at you now, but I am. I can't help it. If you had written back, maybe you would have told me something that could have saved you. Maybe you had a cold and that caused the infection. Maybe I could have convinced you to get medicine. Maybe I could have saved you. Wednesday, June 19th. Dear Scylla, I've barely talked to Mom and Dad since they told me the truth. It's been more than 2 weeks, too. 2 whole weeks, and I haven't said more than, uh-huh, and pass the peas. Every time they look at me all parent-like, I look away. Every time they try to talk to me, I walk away. I don't want them in my life if they took you out of it. Love, Evie. P.S. I still miss you. Friday, June 21st. Dear Scylla, today's the last day of school. I don't want to go. It's not because of the school part. I went back to school last week. I avoid June and Katie and Maggie in the hallways. I get to my classes early and don't talk to anyone. I don't even answer the teacher's questions. They don't get angry about it either. I wonder if Mom and Dad told my teachers what had happened. What would they have said? Would they have actually admitted the horrible things they did? Or would they have twisted the truth around to make themselves look good? To make what they did acceptable? I will never be acceptable, because you'll never be here again. I don't want to go to school because of the you part. You weren't here last night for our traditional last day of school eve visit to the ice cream stand. You're not here now to sign the yearbook we'll get today. You won't be here for the lasts anymore. You won't be here for the firsts anymore. Mom and Dad told me I have to go today. Mom says it's important to say goodbye and thank you to my teachers, that they deserve that much for all their hard work. Dad says going will give me a sense of closure for the year. That's when I lost it. All the words I'd been holding in spilled out in a flood. It was worse than Noah's flood, and I didn't care who got caught up in the rush. Closure? I shrieked the word so loud, Mom literally put her hand over her ears. You mean the closure you didn't give me when Scylla died? Dad flinched at your name. Why did you do it anyway? I asked. What good did lying do? You knew the truth would come out eventually. It had to. Mom squeezed her eyes shut. She looked like a little kid playing hide and seek. A kid who thinks that just because she shuts out the world, she can't be seen. Maybe they wanted to shut out what happened to you. But that doesn't mean they should have made me shut it out, too. Even if I want to do that same thing right now. Love, Evie. P.S. I miss how even in high school, you still called Cheerios, Cheerdios, like you did when you were a kid. Sunday, June 23rd. Dear Scylla, I know I should call June. I want to call June. I know June will make me feel better. I don't want to feel better. Love, Evie. P.S. I want you. Tuesday, June 25th. Dear Scylla, maybe they're wrong. Mom and Dad never answered my question about what you looked like after you died. Maybe they didn't see you. Maybe they just believed what the doctor told them. Maybe the doctor made a mistake. Doctors are wrong all the time, right? They tell someone they're going to have a girl baby and they have a boy. They tell someone they have incurable cancer and then everyone prays and, ta-da, there's a miraculous recovery. Doctors are wrong all the time. It's in the paper and on the news and everything. I bet they're wrong about this, too. You must have tricked the doctors and run away, switched beds with another patient and stole their clothes, got a wig or a hat and snuck down the back stairs into a taxi. Maybe Alex ran away, too. Maybe you guys reunited and you're searching for Amelie. I wish I knew the truth. I wouldn't tell anyone your secret. I promise. Love, Evie. P.S. I miss you. Friday, June 28th. Dear Scylla, I didn't say goodbye to June, Katie, and Maggie when Mom and Dad dragged me off. Okay, they didn't drag me off. They more carried me because I couldn't walk anymore. I didn't even think about them until we were home, 7 hours later, and I saw the halfway open door to Dad's office. I remember first seeing the picture of Amelie and thinking that was the worst thing that could ever happen to me. I remember telling my friends about the baby and how June hugged me to make me feel better. I remember how I dropped her hand like it was on fire when Mom and Dad saw us together. June emails me about 10 times a day. This morning she wrote that she would come over, but she's afraid that Mom and Dad hate her. She said she's afraid that I hate her, too. I know I should care that she thinks that, but I don't. I hurt too much to care that I'm being an awful friend, an awful girlfriend. Everyone wants me to talk, but telling my friends what Mom and Dad told me would make it real. It's not real. It can't be. Love, Evie. P.S. I miss how your bottom teeth were a little crooked, just like mine, and how you made me feel like it wasn't a big deal at all, that it made me special. P.P.S. I'm writing this in my notebook, but I am going to mail it, just as soon as I figure out where you are. Saturday, June 29th. Dear Scylla, I saw Alex today. I was sitting on our front lawn staring at the rope swing Dad put up when we were kids. It was so windy that it kept swinging back and forth, back and forth. It was hypnotic. It made me not think for a little while. Then Alex drove by. I saw his red truck out of the corner of my eye, the one you always used to make fun of. Those pink dice were still on the rearview mirror, too. I remember when you bought them. You said you wanted to girlify his truck and pretty it up. I remember you told me how Alex pretend argued with you, but then put them up anyway, even though they smelled like cherries. Alex looked right at me when he drove by, and I looked away. I guess you guys aren't together. Love, Evie. P.S. I miss you. Sunday, June 30th. Dear Scylla, I didn't go to church with Mom and Dad today. Again. That makes 5 straight weeks of skipping church, after never doing it before in my entire life. Well, except when I've been really sick and barfing all over the place. Or that time we went to Maine for a weekend and the Catholic church there was closed from flooding. But even then, Mom and Dad made us pray in our hotel room for a half hour. I can't go to church now, though. I can't look at everyone there. I can't be in the same room as them. Because those people live in a different universe than me now. A different dimension, even. They think you're still alive, like I did last month. Like I faked myself into believing a few days ago. I wanted you to still be alive. I almost convinced myself it was true, that you were living in Spain under a fake name. Consuela, maybe. You had a long wig and colored contacts. You wore flouncy, bright-colored dresses and rented a room from some elderly woman. The details of your new glamorous life were always a little fuzzy, though. When I imagined it, I could never see your face clearly. Your apartment was cloaked in shadow, and the fantasy always faded away in seconds. I know you're not in Spain. I think that's why I don't want to go to church, because I'm jealous of everyone there. They don't know how lucky they are. Love, Evie. P.S. I miss seeing your face every day. Tuesday, July 9th. Dear Scylla, last night I was walking back to my room after brushing my teeth and heard Mom crying. That's not unusual. I still hear Mom cry a lot lately. I see her crying, too. When a piece of mail comes with your name on it, when I refuse to go to church, when we eat another dinner in silence. For some reason, I went into her room, though. She had a photo album spread open on the bed, filled with pictures of us when we were babies. My short, wispy hair and your twisty curls. My cake-stained face and your chubby knees. Mom had your baby picture out, too. The one they took in the hospital. It looked a lot like the one I saw of Amelie. There was a baby blanket on the bed. One of the pink crocheted ones Grandma used to make. There were baby clothes. Little pink puffy shorts and a pink flowered onesie. A purple ruffled bonnet and a knitted white sweater. These were my babies, Mom said. I felt like saying duh, but for some reason I was trying to be nice. So I nodded. My first babies, she said. You mean Scylla? I asked. Mom shook her head. I was confused until she explained everything. That's when I realized that Mom and Dad had done something wrong back when they were young. They weren't always pure, sinless Catholics. They had, you know, before they were married, just like you did. Mom had gotten pregnant. Then Mom lost the baby. Mom started crying when she told me. Then she apologized for crying. It's been 20 years. I shouldn't be crying anymore. I told her it's okay to cry, because I think I'll be crying about you for the rest of my life. I'm not going to feel bad about it, either. Mom explained more about what had happened, how she'd gotten pregnant in college and had been super afraid it was going to ruin her life, how it almost had. She thought about dropping out of school and it broke her and Dad up for a while. I loved the baby, Mom said, but I hated the baby, too. Because I knew we weren't ready yet. Because I knew people would look at me like I had 2 heads. Because I was going to have to give up so much. That's when she started crying again and explained that after 2 months, the baby's heart had stopped beating. She'd hated herself even more then, for doing something that would put her and Dad through so much pain. She said that's why she and Dad are such good Catholics. Because it had healed them. Because they thought the rules and the laws and the word of God would save them from any more pain, from shame, from loss. They thought it would save us, too. But all they did was drive you away. I almost wanted to tell Mom that it was okay. I almost wanted to hold her hand. I didn't, though. But I did stay in the room with her while she went through the rest of the baby clothes. I gave her that much. Love, Evie. P.S. I miss your hand-me-downs. I always felt so cool in your clothes. Wednesday, July 17th. Dear Scylla, I was at the kitchen table with Mom when the phone rang with June's super secret code. Mom sighed. She grumbled, "These hang-ups are really getting on my nerves." I was probably blushing because she stared at me all narrow-eyed. "Do you know anything about this?" I stammered a bit, but then told her the truth for some reason. Stupid honesty lectures and their stupid lasting effects. "It's June, but I don't want to talk to her right now." I couldn't look at her when I said June's name. I thought Mom was going to send me to my room, or to church, so I could talk to Father O'Malley about reforming. Mom surprised me, though. She told me I should call June back. She told me I should talk to her. She didn't say anything about all the stuff I wrote in my letters. She didn't say anything about our relationship. If June hasn't dumped me already for ignoring her and being the worst girlfriend ever. She just said it'd be a nice thing to call my friend. Huh. Love, Evie. P.S. I miss hearing you talk on the phone to Alex, even when you talked in that sticky, sweet, ooey-gooey voice. Thursday, July 25th. Dear Scylla, I've been thinking about your baby a lot lately, about Amelie. Amelie Evelyn. If that's even what her new family decided to call her. She's 10 months old now. She's probably just babbling, but maybe she started to say a few words. Ball or kitty, mama and dada. Her other mama and dada. She might be taking her first steps. I looked it up and most babies walk around a year, some earlier. I bet your baby would walk earlier. I bet she's super smart already. She's probably picking up toys and stuffed animals and giving them hugs, or drooling all over them. I wonder if she has a stuffed koala bear, too. All the stuff I read said that babies can't form memories. Most don't remember things until they're older than one, and definitely not from when they were a newborn. I like to think that Amelie remembers you, though, that some part of you imprinted itself on her when she was born, like a birthmark, but on her heart instead of her stomach, like the one I have. I wonder if one day, if I ever meet her, she'll recognize you in me. Love, Evie. P.S. I miss you. I miss Amelie, too, even if I've never met her. Sunday, July 28th. Dear Scylla, Mom isn't cooking so much lately. Dad isn't staying so late at work. He joined a summer ultimate team, too. Mom still hides in her room, but she mostly hovers around me, a mixture of apologies and awkward small talk and silly questions. Here's what she asked me yesterday. "Don't the hydrangea bushes look pretty today?" I nodded and smiled, which she took as some sort of encouragement. She asked me about my summer reading and said she liked the color of my flip-flops. She talked about how it was supposed to rain and asked me if I wanted to go to book club with her. No. She hasn't mentioned June since last week, though. Maybe she's not changing her mind after all. Love, Evie. P.S. I miss the way you fiddled with your starfish ring when you were nervous. I used to hate all that clinking and twirling, but I don't think I would anymore. Monday, July 29th. Dear Scylla, June emailed me again this morning. She hasn't missed a day yet. It used to annoy me, but now I'm glad she hasn't stopped, because I wrote back this time. We met at the pool. It was hot today, just like it was last year, the day the pool was closed and I first saw her at the park. She wore a jade green bathing suit and matching jade earrings. She has a neon green streak in her hair now, and her braces are off. Her teeth look shiny and super white. It made me feel self-conscious about my crooked bottom ones. June didn't say anything about my teeth, though. She didn't say anything about my hair either, which was super long now and really straggly, or my bitten-down nails. She said hi. I said hi. She didn't yell at me for ignoring her for ages and ages. I apologized, though. I knew I needed to. She didn't even ask what happened to you. She knew it was bad news, and she knew I didn't want to talk about it. We just sat there on our towels, propped back on our elbows, staring at the pool together. At the other girls I used to be so jealous of, the ones who don't have to worry about liking a girl or being judged for it. I wish I could go back to when worrying about what they thought was my biggest problem. Even to when worrying about what Mom and Dad thought was my biggest problem. June and I stayed until I remembered I'd forgotten sunscreen and my back started to burn. We went out for ice cream.
I got a double scoop. One peppermint stick and one mint chocolate chip, as usual. And I told her everything.
Scylla's gone, I said.
I know. June held my hand then, and I didn't push her away.
Mom and Dad lied to me. All this time.
They shouldn't have, June said. She didn't call them names. She just listened.
I miss her so much.
Then I cried. I got salty tears all over my ice cream. June's melted down her arm.
But that was okay.
We could get two more cones. We couldn't get this moment back. After I'd finished crying, June waited for me to say something else. It was like we were at a fork in the road, and she was letting me decide which path to take. I decided to walk away from grief, if only for today. I asked her about the last day of school. She told me that Nolan broke up with Miri in the middle of the cafeteria, that student council sold the yummiest strawberry cupcakes to raise money for a new sign, that Joey Witter got in trouble for bringing his pet snake into class. She imitated Mr. Barrett's face when he almost sat on it. I laughed. For the first time in 2 months, I laughed. It felt weird, like I was speaking a foreign language. I liked it, but I felt guilty at the same time. Like by laughing, I was betraying you. Like by smiling, I was telling you I didn't care that you were gone. That's not true. I promise. I'm still sad.
Is it okay if I'm not sad all the time, though?
Love, Evie. P.S. I still miss you. Tuesday, August 6th. Dear Scylla, tonight I watched a Red Sox game with Dad. We didn't talk much, but I cheered a few times along with him. He looked at me and smiled a few times, too. Mom came into the room at one point with a batch of brownies. It was the first thing she'd baked in a few weeks, and at first I didn't want to eat one. I wanted to tell her that baking a whole roomful of brownies wouldn't make up for what they'd done. Then I looked at Mom. She was biting her lip. Her hand and the plate were shaking. I took a brownie.
Yummy, I said.
Mom watched the rest of the game with us. The Red Sox won by 2. Love, Evie. P.S. I miss you more than I'd ever miss brownies. Friday, August 9th. Dear Scylla, hate the sin, love the sinner. I heard someone say that once. I guess it's better than hate the sin and the sinner, but I don't know why anyone needs to hate at all. At dinner last night, Dad told me he didn't like me being with June. It was the first time he'd said her name since they admitted to reading my letters. I knew all that baseball watching bonding time was too good to be true, because then Dad said that homosexuality was a sin. I started to get up from the table, but he reached out for me. I backed away.
I think loving a girl is a sin, but I don't hate you for it, Dad said.
Like that made things any better. I waited for Mom to speak up, but she didn't say anything. I guess her suggestion for me to call my friend was the extent of her acceptance. Mom took a bite of salmon and chewed it for about a bazillion times.
We don't hate June either, and we didn't hate Scylla. We just want to protect you both.
Wanted, I said. Past tense, you wanted to protect Scylla. It hurt me to say it, but it was worth it to see them flinch. And you can't protect us. I might be under 18. I might legally be your property or whatever, but I'm my own person. Scylla was her own person.
Was.
I can do what I want, I added, or like who I want. It didn't feel like me saying the words. It felt like someone else, someone proud of who she was, someone who wasn't ashamed of what other people thought. I acted the way I wanted to be, because maybe then this bravery will start to feel more natural. I acted the way I bet you wanted to act all along. It was hard, though, really hard. I'm starting to realize how hard everything was for you and why you ran away instead of fighting. I'm going to fight, though. I told Mom and Dad that I didn't know what was going to happen with June, but that I liked her. I told them about how I don't think I can ever trust them again. I told them I wasn't sure about God. I think I shocked them with that last one, but they didn't yell or scream or faint. They listened. They grimaced, but they listened. Then they started talking.
Honey, you're young.
Mom said. You don't know anything about the future yet. Who knows how you'll feel in a few weeks? You don't have to be one of those people. I like girls. I like June, I said. I am one of those people.
Why don't you talk to Father O'Malley?
Dad asked.
He might be able to help you.
He'll point you to some passages in the Bible, Mom said. Important ones. I'm not talking to some old guy in a robe about who I like.
I stomped my foot on the ground like a kindergartner, then realized that it wasn't helping my case.
This is me, and I'm not going to change. Either accept me or don't, but you can't send me away, too.
Mom and Dad looked like I'd slapped them in the face. Mom's already really pale, but she kind of looked like a ghost then. And not the kind of ghosts from Harry Potter, either. The scary kinds that haunt you. The ones that are haunted themselves. They told me they aren't going to send me away. But then Dad said I'm too young to date. And Mom said I shouldn't tell anyone about what I am. I don't know if I'll be able to change them. That makes me sad. But at least they didn't scream at me or lock me up.
Progress? Love, Evie. P.S. They miss you too. Wednesday, August 14th. Dear Scylla, today's June's birthday. She's finally 12, just like me. I feel guilty that I'm not throwing her a big party, but when I told her that, she said she didn't want a party at all. I'm not sure if she's lying, but I'm trying to trust her, because I'm still too sad to plan, or even go to, a huge party. It would feel like the balloons and streamers were laughing at me. I bet I'd get mad at everyone else for having fun, too. I still feel guilty for having fun sometimes. I went for a bike ride with June yesterday and laughed while I was coasting down Tanglewood Hill. Then I started crying at the bottom. I pretended a fly had flown into my eye, but June totally wasn't fooled. She still pretended she believed me. I bought her a cake, though, a chocolate one with vanilla frosting from the supermarket bakery. I used my own money to buy it and asked them to write Happy Birthday, June, on it in big green letters, to match her hair. The cake ended up saying, Happy Birthday, John. I bet the bakery worker was the same person who made the Beauty and the Beast programs. We ate the whole thing and then watched a horror movie. It was fun. Is that okay? Love, Evie. P.S. I do miss you. Sunday, August 18th. Dear Scylla, it's weird, but I keep thinking about my first communion. I remember being so excited to wear that frilly white dress. Mom said I could get a new one, but I wanted to wear the same one you did, the one with a lacy skirt and pearls around the neckline. I remember lining up with all the other kids in my CCD class outside the church. The trees were blossoming above us as we walked up the front steps. Then we all walked down the aisle, two by two. I had to stand next to Miri, who kept bragging about the gold cross necklace her parents had given her that morning. The whole time we were walking, I kept looking over at her and that shiny necklace. I wanted a gold cross, not the boring daffodils Dad had given me that morning. Then I saw Mom and Dad on the right side of the church, below their favorite stained glass window, the one with Jesus on the cross. The looks of pride on their faces made me feel better than a shiny new necklace ever could. I didn't think I could feel any happier, ever in my whole life, until they gave me my own cross that afternoon. I wish things were that simple again. I miss believing that Mom and Dad are always right. I miss going to church and having it just be part of my routine. I miss knowing that God will fix everything, and that if He doesn't, He has a reason. There was no good reason for you to die, though. And Mom and Dad aren't always right. I know that now, no matter how much they try to convince me otherwise. Love, Evie. P.S. We still have that old dress in the attic. I went up to look this morning, and it looks so small. You were so small then. So was I. It feels like forever ago. Tuesday, August 20th. Dear Scylla, we looked through a bunch of photo albums tonight, ones I brought down from the attic. I used to think Mom was old-fashioned for always printing pictures off her phone, but now I'm glad for the bazillion albums that were stacked up there. We started with me and you when we were kids, then looked at the ones when we were older, you playing on a baseball team in middle school,
way after all the rest of the girls switched to softball. You, caught in the act of popping a ginormous pink bubblegum bubble. You and me in front of Cinderella's castle at Disney World. Then just you, giving Mom a thumbs up in the line for Space Mountain. I totally chickened out, as usual. You after My Fair Lady, holding the flowers Alex gave you. You and Alex, before the winter formal last year. I still think that purple dress is the prettiest dress I've ever seen. That day, I thought you were the prettiest person I'd ever seen. Mom said the same thing. She looked so beautiful that night.
She always looked so beautiful,
Dad said. Then the impossible happened. Mom and Dad apologized to me. It was the first time they'd said the words since everything had happened. I'm sorry. They cried. I cried. It wasn't the kind of bad crying, though. The kind that makes me feel like a black fog has entered my body and is poisoning me from the inside out. It felt like someone had popped open a release valve, and all that fog was spilling out of me. It's been more than a year since you went away. It's been almost a year since you died. Maybe it's time for us to breathe clean air again. Love, Evie. P.S. We all miss you. Thursday, August 29th. Dear Scylla, I know now that you'll never get these letters. I know they'll stay in this notebook forever. I know it will hurt every time I look at them, just like it hurts every time I write them. It hurts because you're gone. It hurts because I still don't know why you didn't write back from Aunt Maureen's. It hurts for a lot of reasons. I'm still going to write, though, because it makes me feel better, because it's the only connection to you I have left. I heard Mom and Dad praying the other night. Well, I think I heard them praying. They were murmuring the same way they do when they're saying the rosary. When I got closer, though, I realized they weren't talking to God. They were talking to you, telling you what they've been doing lately and how much they miss you. Maybe these letters are my own form of prayer. Maybe I miss you is my amen. Love, Evie. P.S. I miss you. Tuesday, September 3rd. Dear Scylla, today was the first day of 8th grade. School this year is weird. Everyone knows about you now. They know that you got pregnant and that you died. They know Mom and Dad lied to me about it. This means that everyone is avoiding me. Either they think I'm a total freak or that death is contagious. The only people who talk to me now are Katie, Maggie, and June. Ethan, too, at lunch. It's a little bit lonely. Which I know is a strange thing to say since I basically avoided everyone for a whole month. Maybe that's why Mom and Dad didn't tell anyone about you at first. About the pregnancy, I mean. Maybe they were afraid of being treated like this. Of being avoided or shunned. Of people feeling sorry for them. Not that that's an excuse. But maybe that's what started all of this. Shame and guilt and standards. The same icky stuff that got in the way of me and June being together. Because we are together now. She's my girlfriend still, even after all the awful stuff that happened. At school, she sometimes brings me a little present. Something small, like a new pencil or a bracelet she made. Not that a bunch of beads on a string is going to fix what happened, but it shows she cares. She got detention for me, too. When Danny Donato told me my parents were weirdos, she screamed at him until Mrs. Abbott had to literally pull her out of the room. Later on, we agreed that they are weirdos. But it was the principle of the thing. We hold hands, too. Not all the time and not in the hallways, but at lunch, before school, at Tony's Pizza. We haven't kissed again, but that's okay. I don't think I want to right now. Someday, though. Because I'm okay with liking girls now. That's who I am. Love, Evie. P.S. I miss you. Friday, September 6th. Dear Scylla, Mom and Dad invited June over for dinner tonight. Mom made a big dinner, too, a fancy one like she used to make when she and Dad had dinner parties for their friends. She hasn't done that since you died. It's getting easier to write about what happened now. You died. It happened. It'll never be over, but it did happen. I think we're all realizing that now. Mom and Dad started seeing a therapist together. They're making me see one, too. And even though I protest a lot, it's not so bad. Colleen is young, maybe in her 30s, and really nice. She listens to me and doesn't get angry when I talk about religion or my feelings or anything, really. I think it's helping. It's helping Mom and Dad, too. I don't know what they're talking about with their therapist, but I heard Dad laugh the other day. They keep trying to spend time with me, which is kind of annoying, but not so bad. Especially since they've stopped bugging me about church and June. Especially since they're not making comments about what I should be doing. Especially since they invited June over. They were actually nice to her. Mom asked June questions about the musical. June's planning on trying out for Shrek. And we all talked about what kind of sets I would design for the show. Dad asked her about California. They looked at her weirdly a bunch of times, like she was a bank robber and they were trying to see where she'd hidden her loot. But they didn't say anything mean. We didn't hold hands. I didn't want to push it. But maybe one day soon we can. Love, Evie. P.S. I miss you. Monday, September 9th. Dear Scylla, in chorus today we sang a song from My Fair Lady. I loved seeing you in that musical. You were a better Eliza Doolittle than Audrey Hepburn was in the movie. I remember you telling me that after the cast list went up, two senior girls got mad at you because a sophomore wasn't supposed to get the lead role. But you did. Because you were talented. You were nice and smart and funny too. Also annoying. You snored super loudly and cracked your gum and took showers that lasted way longer than the 10-minute rule. You stole Reese's peanut butter cups from my Halloween candy stash and told me all my music was super cheesy. But when Mrs. Harper passed out the sheet music to I Could Have Danced All Night, I didn't remember the candy stealing or the freezing cold showers. All I could see was you, dancing and spinning across the stage, dreaming of your future with Henry Higgins. You got a standing ovation that night, the next night too. That's how I want to remember you. Dreaming of your future, forever and ever. Love, Evie. P.S. But I still miss you. Tuesday, September 10th. Dear Scylla, I saw Alex this afternoon. Sat next to him a while, too. We didn't talk much, but that's okay. It was at church, even though today's not Sunday. I still haven't gone to church with Mom and Dad on Sunday, even though they ask me to come every week. They still look disappointed when I say no, but they accept it, I think. For some reason, I wanted to go today, though. Maybe it was the angel necklace I found at the bottom of my jewelry box, the one Dad got for both of us that time our whole family got the flu of doom. Maybe it was because Katie and Maggie kept talking about the fun party they had at youth group last weekend. Maybe it was because I felt lonely and church used to make me feel better. Whatever reason it was, I went to church today. Maybe Alex was feeling lonely, too, because when I walked up to the altar, I still made the sign of the cross when I passed the crucifix. Total habit. He was already there. He had his hands steepled and his head down. There were two candles shining brightly in front of him. Vigil lights. When Great Uncle Paul died, Mom and Dad made an offering at church. When my principal's mother died, they did the same thing. Put some money in the little gold box by the altar and lit a candle. Then they prayed. They prayed for the person who died, and they prayed for their spirit. They prayed for the family they left behind. Alex was doing that for you, and for Amelie. He didn't have to tell me. I just knew. He smiled at me. It was a small smile, but his mouth definitely turned up. I smiled at him. Then I lit my own two candles and knelt down beside him. We didn't say anything. We just prayed. It was nice. It made me feel a little better. I'm still not sure about God, but anything that makes me feel better can't be that bad. Maybe I don't have to do religion exactly like Mom and Dad do. Maybe I can take what I want from it and leave the rest on the shelf, like I'm going food shopping and I decide that the chocolate chip cookies are way better than the M&M ones. Or maybe I can buy the ingredients to make my own cookies. Maybe. Love, Evie. P.S. Alex misses you, too. I can tell. Saturday, September 14th. Dear Scylla, Happy New Year's Eve! Okay, it's obviously not really New Year's Eve, but tonight we're pretending it is. since you weren't here to celebrate with us last year. Since we didn't celebrate at all last year. So we're having our summer New Year's party. In September. Which is a bit different, but I guess traditions can change.